I'll start recording now. Let's talk about, before we get to our main video, let's talk about three subjects. The protests today in Lebanon, massive protests. The protesters were actually looking to enter the parliament building. They're upset, rightly so. People in Lebanon are very upset. Let's also talk about a New York Times article on Chaz Chop, which is an interesting article from the New York Times. That's why we're going to discuss it, is because it is coming from the New York Times. And let's talk about also some developments with the Belarus Wagner Group update, which is also an interesting update on that. So let's first just give an update. Lebanon protest today. You know, how can you blame them? How can you blame the Lebanese people? They're extremely upset.
Yes, before I go into this, can I just say that obviously we have been on the receiving end of various messages from many people in the Lebanon, in Beirut itself, about the causes of the initial explosion. I just wanted to say that we're listening to everything you tell us with great care and great attention. And when we pointed out when we did our other video that we were basing it on the official story, we can't, we're not assuming anything. Anything you want to tell us, which is interesting, we will listen to and hear with great interest. Now, about these protests, this is completely unsurprising. Lebanon, as we said in our video, has been going through a terrible time, that the people of Beirut and of Lebanon are now protesting and are becoming angry with a political establishment that has so completely failed them, both with this explosion and with the preceding economic crisis and with the volatility there is in the economic world of and the political world of Lebanon and the rampant corruption there. That is completely not surprising at all. And what I'm hearing at the moment is that the foreign ministry building has been stormed. There's been an attempt, as you said, to storm the parliament building. And no doubt, and I have no doubt, this thing is going to grow and become stronger. What will come of all of this? I am not so sure. The great problem with Lebanon, the great problem, the crisis, if you like, with Lebanon, is that every so often, every couple of years, something shocking and terrible happens there. People say, you know, the system is totally beyond repair. It needs to be reformed. There are protests. There was the Cedar Revolution, if some people remember, a couple of years ago. There's all these protests, all these movements, and then somehow we default back to the system, the corrupt system that we've had previously. Obviously, I hope it will be different this time, but past experience makes me worried that it won't be.
Yeah, the Lebanon problem is at its base, outside of the terrible tragedy that happened, at its base, Lebanon is suffering from a corrupt financial system, a deeply indebted and a very corrupt financial system. And of course, you can take it even one step further and say it's just that lack of stability and leadership in the government.
Absolutely.
Position. You know, in Greece, Alexander, we always say that, you know, the current government you have, the next government will be even worse. And then the next government after that will be even worse. And I think that's the type of spiral that Lebanon is.
Lebanon has. You're absolutely right. I mean, the corruption in the financial system and in the economy, by the way, a corruption which betrays the tremendous entrepreneurial drive many Lebanese people have and their huge capacity for hard and honest work. But, you know, the system itself is incredibly corrupt. That, I think, is linked with the corruption of the political system, which appears to be deeply factionalized in ways that it is impossible, it seems, for Lebanon to fully overcome. And I hope the day will come when that factionalization will be overcome and that Lebanon and the people of Lebanon, I should say, because I've met them from every sort of community and religious group. I know lots of Lebanese people. They are actually a nation. Of that, I have no doubt at all. Lebanese people form a nation, whether they're Christians, Muslims, Sunnis, Shias, whatever. But that needs to cohere into a political consensus, and they need to somehow find a way of breaking through these, I shall call them factional or sectarian impositions that have been imposed on them, which I don't actually find that most Lebanese people that I know share at all. I mean, adversarial factional feuds don't really seem to be as important at a personal level as they seem to be at the political one. So I hope Lebanon can overcome this. That's why, you know, I think that these protests we're seeing in Beirut now, and, you know, I'm not somebody who's generally comes out and says protests are automatically a good thing. But in Lebanon, I think they're probably a necessary one, because people need a proper, comprehensive shakeout and clearing out of the political and financial system, and of the tremendous corruption that exists in both. But whether it will happen, we shall see. As I said, past experience doesn't give me a great deal of hope.
Right. Well, as long as the protests don't get violent, as long as it doesn't turn into a color revolution. And if we're on the subject of color revolutions, Alexander, it looks like, let's shift gears, it looks like Lukashenko in Belarus is now warning against color revolutions as the election approaches, which I believe is August 11th, if I'm not mistaken, or 14th.
I think it's August 9th. I think it's Sunday. August 9th. So okay. It's coming up very fast. But we are making this broadcast, I should make it clear, before this, you know, very imminently before this election happens. Now, I mean, this is becoming a most bizarre election, and this business of the 33 Russians, not 32, who have been detained in Belarus has now taken an extraordinary, even bizarre twist, because the word that's now coming out of Moscow and to some extent of Minsk, that's the capital of Belarus, has changed now completely, in the sense that these 33 Russians, that they're still classified as mercenaries, supposedly are not Wagner Group mercenaries at all. This whole thing allegedly was a scheme hatched up by Ukrainian intelligence, which used Rosneft, that's the used sort of dummy Rosneft accounts, to set up a kind of sting where they would lure these people into Belarus, under the impression that they were going to be sent off to guard Rosneft facilities in Syria and Venezuela and wherever. And only, of course, when they arrived in Belarus, to denounce them to the Belarusian authorities as being sent by Russia to destabilize the election and to back the woman who is currently the alternative presidential candidate. Now, this is an extraordinary story. I have to say, in this part of the world, I'm not saying it isn't true. It could very well be true. But the result is a complete switch in the mood music. Lukashenko and Putin have now talk to each other. They are the best of friends again. Lukashenko has given an interview, interestingly enough, to a Ukrainian journalist, in which he called Putin his elder brother. And he's now warning of the dangers of a plot to stage a Maidan uprising in Kiev on the day of the election.
And in Minsk,
in the center of Minsk. And he's made it absolutely clear that if anything like that happens, the riot police, who are very loyal to him, will disperse it. And he's also arranged for the campaign manager of the chief opposition candidate to be arrested. So just before we did this broadcast, I learned that he'd been arrested also. So we now have a switch. So a few days ago, you know, Russia was the person that, you know, Lukashenko was blaming for everything. Now it's switched to Ukraine. It's difficult to keep one's, you know, to keep a level head in all of this. I mean, because it's one story one day, a completely different story the next day. What the truth is, I am not going to speculate. All I will say is that I always did find the theory that the Russians were out to destabilize Lukashenko rather far-fetched, because it didn't seem to be me to be in their interests to do. So that, you know, the Ukrainian intelligence might have been up to something. I don't discount it at all, but I'm not going to pretend that I know where the truth is. What I will say is this: Lukashenko, I'm sure, will win the election. I am sure he will maintain control, given that he seems to be tilting back to Russia again. If all of this was done, all of these, you know, actions were done in order to get him to distance himself from Russia, if that was the plan, either someone else's plan or conceivably even his own plan, then it may have backfired. And it looks as if, from the latest words, that he's now teaming up with the Russians again and might be moving more close to them again. So we shall see. I mean, it's a very strange situation, and I'm not going to pretend I know for a fact or definitely where the truth lies.
Yeah, this story could be Russian disinformation too.
It could be that.
It really could be Russian disinformation to muddy the waters, but usually the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
My hunch is that, you know, these guys probably were mercenaries, Wagner guys.
Yeah.
Maybe they were in transit from Minsk. Minsk is a pretty pretty popular transit point.
Oh, absolutely.
Between Russia, Ukraine, and the area.
Yes.
These guys were in transit.
Yeah.
Lukashenko probably thought it was a smart move on his part to concoct a story, and he's kind of now been busted. That's my hunch, that it's probably somewhere in the middle, and it lies with a buffoonish move by Lukashenko.
I rather agree. I mean, it's the kind of thing he might do. I mean, it's sort of overcomplicated way of showing to the Russians that, you know, really he's, you know, strong guy you can't really push around. And now he's discovered that maybe this wasn't such a good idea on the eve of an election where he might very well need Russian backing after all. So, you know, it looks as if he's rowing back. But, you know, this is a weird part of the world. And when you said that Minsk is a great transit place, I've never been there. But my wife, I should say, goes there regularly. And she's described to me how, you know, you get this extraordinary situation where you go to a hotel in Minsk and you find, you know, members of NATO military on one floor, members of the Russian military on the floor above that, and members of the Chinese military on the floor above that. I mean, they're all mixed up together and sort of crossing paths and doing all kinds of things. And he tries, Lukashenko tries also to be on good relations with both Russia and Ukraine at the same time. Russia and Ukraine, at least in Ukraine's perception, are at war with each other. So that's a very difficult balancing act to follow also. So it's a weird part of the world in these terms. And it's difficult to know where the truth is. But quite likely what you say is true, and that this is a cover story that has been cobbled up in a hurry in order to give Lukashenko a way out so that he doesn't, you know, find himself head to head with the Russians.
Yeah, an off-ramp. Anyway, all right, let's talk about Chas Chop.
Now,
what's the New York Times article on that?
Well, this is an astonishing article. Now, I say astonishing. Astonishing, as you rightly said at the start of the program, not because of what it says, which is exactly what we have been saying on the Duran all along. We were saying it would be the case from the day Chas, as it then was, started, but from the fact that it has appeared in the New York Times. Now, what happened is the New York Times has sent one of its reporters to Seattle. That person has now spoken to people who were running local businesses in the area where Chas Chop, you know, was for a time the ruling power. And what it has discovered is that these people's businesses were trashed, that they were being all the time threatened by dangerous groups of armed men, that there was rioting, that there was a smashing of their businesses, that they, you know, graffiti, garbage everywhere. I mean, it's unbelievable things. And what all of these people are saying, that everybody, that the every one of these business people that the New York Times interviewed is saying, was that, you know, absolutely need the police. This idea of, you know, not having the police is a terrible idea. And some of them have now come together and are suing the city of Seattle for abandoning them. Now, you know, for me and for us here at the Duran, this is no surprise at all. I mean, it does give some rather vivid descriptions of some of the things that were going on during the time of Chow's Chop, where, let's remember, there were officially 6 shooting incidents and 2 murders. But you know, it's nothing that we would be surprised about. But it is interesting that he's come out in the New York Times. And I wonder what some of the people who write for the New York Times, some of these people who, you know, who can't bear US senators writing op-eds that they don't agree with, how they would react to all of this. And how many of the readers of the New York Times, who've been hearing the New York Times telling them endlessly about how peaceful these protesters were, how they react to reading all about this. I mean, it almost comes across from some of the descriptions as a sort of place that was heading very much towards a kind of Mad Max type situation. And that is exactly how it's described. You know, people need to read this article. One thing that was interesting, and which didn't surprise me either, is that there does seem to be a very early beginning of a split, embryonic split within Chow's Chop between the Antifa elements and the elements that saw themselves as more about BLM, that they were starting to go in different directions. And some of the BLM people were blaming some of the Antifa people, who they were very keen to say were white. Whether that's true or not, I'm not going there. But, you know, that they're very keen to blame Antifa for the worst of the violence and the worst of the disorder and the rioting. Well, you know, that wouldn't surprise me if it was true. And I can anticipate that over time, that split will grow. But very embryonic, at least in Chop Chow's, and maybe not the really interesting point about the story. The interesting point about the story is defund the police, do away the police, allow people like Chow's Chop to establish themselves in your neighborhood, and you're in for a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I agree. The interesting part is the New York Times element. Over time, yeah, I think the two groups can't coexist side by side over time. Yeah. If Antifa will get pushed out, they'll get thrown under the bus, and they'll. I think the globalists and the Democrats and the elites will focus more on BLM, and they'll fund BLM.
I agree. I agree.
With a lot more cash than they'll fund, and they'll operate Antifa. But also on the New York Times, from this point forward, every article coming out of the mainstream media on the New York Times, we have to look at it through the lens of an election. Yeah. And I think the reason that the New York Times is probably writing an article like this and may write more articles like this is because they're probably seeing some polling numbers and they're seeing some of the sentiment as to what happened in Chow's and Chop. And they're probably saying, you know what? People weren't too happy with what happened there. Maybe that's my hunch. I think everything at this point forward is going to be about the elections.
I agree. And if the polling numbers continue to head in the direction in which they are heading, I think you will see that this pressure to blame Antifa for the trouble is going to increase. One of the very interesting points about this article was that the New York just slips out the fact that there's been trouble in Portland, and it blamed Antifa for it. So Antifa is being built up as the fall guy for the fact that, you know, that all, you know, these protests are not quite as peaceful as after all. Antifa is dispensable. You know, they use it. If it becomes an inconvenience, it becomes a problem, they can drop it. BLM is a different thing entirely.
Yeah, they've put too much money into BLM.
They've invested far too much. I mean, the New York Times, which whole 1619 project, isn't going to turn on BLM. But Antifa is another matter.
They're
expendable. I mean, you know, an ultra-leftist and an anarchist bunch of
dumb teenagers, come on, just dumb,
exactly.
Misunderstood, misguided,
yeah,
teenagers and young adults who should be looking for more productive things to do.
Well, indeed, quite so. Absolutely right. So, I mean, you know, they are eminently dispensable. BLM is a different thing entirely. But it did interest me that, as I said, little admission that, you know, things in Portland are not quite as peaceful as, you know, we're being told. And it's Antifa's fault. Yeah. Maybe that was the whole point of it.
You'll be hearing that it's Antifa's fault a lot now. That's absolutely. That's what we'll be hearing now as the election approaches. All right, we'll leave it there. Let's see, PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, star. Please donate to us and also check out the Durant Shop.
I've got Australia this time, and we're getting all kinds. This is the United States too, by the way. So we got all our amazing mugs and our amazing new shirts. You can see I'm wearing one with Britain here. Alex has got one with Russia.
Yes.
And by the way, I should just say it's been a steaming hot day here, 33 degrees in London, which can be, you know, unbearably hot in London. I appreciate in other places 33 degrees might not sound so much, but in London it's awful. But if you're wearing a nice Durand shirt, you feel perfectly comfortable and cool because they are beautiful shirts, 100% cotton, and they are satin smooth and cool. And also, of course, we don't just have shirts, we got all kinds of other great things in our shop. We got books and we got hats and hoodies and stickers and things. But the important thing is we are expanding the range. Alex has got amazing new products up there. You find enameled mugs, you find all kinds of new shirts. And if you can't find the flag of your own country on one of our mugs, wait a little. It's probably coming. But if it's still not there in a short while, by all means, drop us a line.
All right. You'll find a link for the Durant Shop underneath this video. All right, guys. Take care.